Welcome to the Newsbusters podcast with your host, executive editor of Newsbusters, Tim Graham.
Hello and welcome. You know it's a good night for the Republicans when it's a very bad night for MSNBC and CNN. In conservative territory, we're saying, hey, it's morning again in Virginia. Hey, this state isn't as blue as they thought. You know how you get that swagger? Well, Biden won by 10 points. How could Terry McAuliffe possibly be losing? It's like they weren't watching the guy in the stump or they weren't watching his commercials. But they had this whole idea that, well, polling results should last forever. I didn't think anybody in politics should think about that. So, eagle-eyed Curtis Houck and Nick Night Train Fonda Caro were here last night blogging furiously into the early morning, capturing all of the drama, all of the complaining, all the bitter tears. Yes, when our media Democrats figure out they're going to lose, there's going to be a lot more attacking of the Republicans. Clearly, everything they tried to do that was successful is terrible lying and poison. Losing politicians might get on stage and concede with grace. Journalists just don't. Take Rachel Maddow, for example. She was mad after Barack Obama won the presidency in 2008. Bob McDonnell won in 2009. And what did the Republicans do? They instantly elevated him to presidential status. Yeah, Bob McDonnell won the Virginia governor's race. Not a big shock. And yeah, somebody probably talked him up for the White House. I mean, they're doing that with Glenn Youngkin now. That's just kind of the days after an election, you're kind of giddy. And it looks like, well, you did something in a blue or purple state that we didn't think could be done. So maybe it's something that would transfer to other states. Obviously, the big difference with Youngkin, at least compared to Trump, was style. If you didn't see the ads, if you weren't in Virginia or in the D.C. market like most of us, you didn't see that Youngkin's ads were personal. He was usually on camera talking. He didn't usually have some announcer being like, Terry McAuliffe, he does terrible things to humans and animals. You know, I mean, there wasn't that many ads that were sort of that. I mean, meanwhile, McAuliffe was running these ads where we're like, January 6th, Glenn Youngkin might not have been there, but that's who he is. You know what I mean? The Mark Herring, the losing attorney general, basically did that to his opponent. Jason Meares is basically the insurrection writ large. I mean, the kind of ads these people ran, you're just like, the Democrats clearly don't fear that they'll be fact-checked for their smears. Anyway, back to Rachel Maddow complaining about Robert McDonnell. And then Bob McDonnell was a terrible governor who ran on crazy policies that made no sense. She mentioned in particular something that MSNBC thought was wildly controversial back in the day, which was they were suggesting women seeking abortions should get mandatory vaginal ultrasounds. You know, the average person, the average guy who's been a dad would be like, well, most ultrasounds, they put it on the belly. Obviously, Democrats are extremely protective of women seeking abortions. They shouldn't get an ultrasound. They should get a free dinner. And what's with the, you notice these lesbians are always the most obsessive about abortions. Like they're in danger of needing one. But, you know, this is Rachel Maddow. Very, very upset back then. She has not forgotten. And then McDonald's career was destroyed by scandal. I mean, these were scandals that were driven by the Washington Post, but they were, the misbehavior was McDonald's. He had milked the office for personal goodies. You shouldn't do that. A Republican governor in Virginia should live with the idea that the Washington Post Democrat is going to be breathing down his or her neck. So that's the last Republican governor was elected. Then we got McAuliffe. Then we have Ralph Northam. But MSNBC, so upset. Curtis was busy tweeting and tweeting. Do you follow these guys on Twitter? Curtis Houck, H-O-U-C-K. We are Penn State, Curtis Houck. Had Nicole Wallace being very grumpy.
I think we know the answer to some of this. I watched Glenn Youngkin's interviews on Fox News, and he did nothing that Claire's... He did not... I mean, he worshipped at the altar of Donald Trump on Fox News. He flew an insurrection flag at his rallies. He simply didn't... He played dumb about a Zoom rally. He did not really put much distance between himself and Donald Trump on the big lie or the deadly insurrection in which police officers were maimed by flagpoles. So I think that the real ominous thing is that critical race theory, which isn't real, turned the suburbs 15 points to the Trump insurrection-endorsed Republican. What do Democrats do about that?
Now, we could pick apart every sentence of this. Maybe we'll try. Youngkin worshipped at the altar of Trump on Fox News. I think Youngkin spoke well of Trump on Fox News. Youngkin, when he was in the primaries, certainly wanted to go after the Trump voters and seek their support. And because he did that, Terry McAuliffe never let you forget that. I don't know if he ever did an ad that didn't have Glenn Youngkin saying nice things about Trump. But worshipped at the altar of Trump, Nicole? I mean, I watched Nicole Wallace on The View when Bill Clinton came on. That's worshiping at the altar. Then Youngkin flew an insurrection flag at his rallies. What on earth does that mean? Did you ever see Youngkin waving what is an insurrection flag? Well, there was one event, Youngkin was not present, where somebody brought out a flag from January 6th. I believe it was from the Trump rally. Not the violent insurrection. No, the Trump rally before the so-called insurrection. And Youngkin distanced himself from that. He said, I'm not going to... It'd be weird to celebrate a flag that was brought to the, you know, to a riot. Still the flag. But this is the sort of thing where he's distancing himself from it. And the people on MSNBC are like, you can't possibly distance yourself because we here will never forget. And then he said, Youngkin did not really put much distance between himself and Trump and the big lie. No. Youngkin eventually said Biden was elected. Youngkin wasn't pro January 6th. And I don't know what this means that police officers were maimed by flagpoles. I believe they were beaten, but did anyone lose a limb? This is just, the rhetoric is so hot. They're so emotional. And nobody fact checks MSNBC. It's very rare. PolitiFact is going to, you know, pick apart Tucker Carlson's January 6th documentary. But they're not going to watch MSNBC on election night and fact check Nicole Wallace. And then, of course, the classic, the real ominous thing is that critical race theory isn't real, but it turned the suburbs to the Trump insurrection-endorsed Republican. Yeah, see, this is just wildness. The insurrection-endorsed Republican. But, I mean, if you're going to play those games, Nicole, Biden was an insurrection-endorsed Democrat, a Black Lives Matter, Antifa, insurrection-endorsed, burn the federal building in Portland-endorsed Democrat. I mean, just stop. And then, of course, they love this whole part about critical race theory. That's not real. That's a ghost. David Plouffe, critical race theory was a lie. And I think we need to go on offense a little bit. And Terry McAuliffe tried to do that. Say it's a lie. They know it's a lie. No, they don't know it's a lie because it's real. When Nicole Wallace turned to David Plouffe, he said, oh yeah, in addition to the flag flying and the banning of the books. Banning of the books? See, you have to sort of take this code and say, well, now let's explain it to you. the Republicans in Virginia wanted to pass a bill that would suggest that if teachers were going to use inflammatory books like Toni Morris's Beloved, with scenes of forced fellatio and rape, that maybe the parents should have the opportunity to opt out. This, as cartooned by the David Pluffs, is book banning. What the one mother who is objecting to the use of Beloved was suggesting, why can't you just put this on an optional summer reading list instead of making it a mandatory class assignment? That's not an unreasonable suggestion. But the Democrats want to make it all about race because this is what they do. They all ran around saying critical race theory was a lie or it was a fraud or it was a fake. And it's not being taught anywhere in Virginia. We heard that so much. Our video whiz, Bill D'Agostino, put together a medley of shame.
This election has become the latest to weaponize something called critical race theory. Critical race theory is kind of, it's become the new dog whistle, except you can actually hear it, so it's not really a dog whistle.
Yeah, let's start there. Critical race theory not taught in Virginia schools. But it does show that Republicans are good. It's dishonest. It's not a good faith argument, but they are talented at branding. They're talented at making an election about certain issues, even if they don't have any basis in reality.
One key issue for Youngkin, opposition to the teaching of critical race theory in schools. The curriculum is not taught in Virginia schools, and McAuliffe has called the tactic a racist dog whistle.
What he calls critical race theory, even though it's not taught in Virginia schools.
And the notion that critical race theory is being taught in Virginia classrooms. A lot of these voters, Chris, weren't able to exactly articulate what that means.
A lot of them believe that critical race theory is being taught in the schools. They don't like that, but it's really not on the curriculum in Virginia.
Critical race theory that is not taught in public schools in Virginia.
But critical race theory is not taught in Virginia K through 12 schools.
Critical race theory, as we know, isn't taught in Virginia schools.
There's no evidence it's been taught in public schools.
It is not taught in any Virginia high school.
It's not taught in public schools.
This is a post-factual error. It doesn't matter that it isn't taught in Virginia schools. It's this generalized attitude that whites are being put upon, and we've got to do something about it. We being white voters.
A Fox News investigation has found the Virginia Department of Education recommended a controversial book in March 2020 to all stakeholders as part of its Ed Equity VA. On page 11, Love writes, lastly, teachers must embrace theories such as critical race theory.
It's absolutely taught in Virginia. In fact, Terry McAuliffe promoted critical race theory to all public schools when he was last governor in 2015.
Yes, and then my boy Ben and I were in the car the other morning, listening to National Public Radio, which I do from time to time in the car. Yeah, this morning they had an ad for PETA, the People for Ethical Treatment of Animals. So hope nobody at NPR has a hamburger. Anyway, they were discussing the Virginia race. Morning Edition anchor Steve Inskeep and his reporter on the ground in Richmond.
It's worth noting here that critical race theory isn't actually in Virginia's K through 12 curriculum.
Yeah, I suppose we should be clear here. The discussion about how to talk about race is a real discussion, but he's come up with an imaginary take here and has gotten to the verge of the governor's office on this imaginary take.
An imaginary take. That's the phrase that was used. And nobody fact checks these people. It does not matter to them that the State Department of Education had guidelines suggesting here's how you might want to teach your students critical race theory. That was while Terry McAuliffe was governor the last time. Reporters, you're not stupid. I don't think Steve Inskeep is a stupid person, but he's not willing to look at what really went on. And then they go on and discuss how Terry McAuliffe says this is a racist dog whistle. See, you can just assume that the Republicans in Virginia are racist. Now, the reporter from Richmond isn't going to say, oh, but wait, Steve, you're suggesting, and Terry McAuliffe suggesting the Republicans are capitalizing on racism. Can I ask you, why is the lieutenant governor a black woman? And if the Republicans were tap dancing with white supremacy, as Jonathan Capehart likes to say on PBS, don't you think that Winsome Sears, the woman of color that's the incoming lieutenant governor of Virginia, would have lost by 10 points if the Republicans were all about appealing to racists? Jason Meares, who won the Attorney General's race, Cuban American. Is he a white supremacist? Can you be a Latino white supremacist and a black white supremacist? Because I think the answer is yes if you're a Democrat, because basically you suggest if you don't support the Democrats, you ain't black. I mean, we've heard that, haven't we? Heard that from Joe Biden. But yeah, the NPR types are all basically running around saying critical race theory is this invention from the Trump Fox News ecosystem. It's become shorthand for the idea that kids are taught about the legacy of racism in America. No. We've all been taught about the legacy of racism in America. I went to high school in the Carter and Reagan years, pal. We were taught about the legacy of racism in America. Everybody's taught about slavery. Everybody's taught about Jim Crow. Let's not pretend that Republicans are opposed to teaching the real history of America. Talk about a phony issue. And for Democrats to talk about appealing to race, it's what they do. It's their bag. It's their jam. They are the racial divisiveness party. They have to count on minority votes, and they think, you know what really gets minority votes? Constantly accusing the Republicans of being a bunch of Klan-wearing bigots, even though, I'm sorry, the Klan back in the time were a bunch of Southern Democrats. Oh, now do we learn that in the history rooms now? Or maybe our critical race theorists not quite getting to that part? Now, this summer, I wrote about a teacher who came on CNN who claimed she didn't teach CRT, but she does. She went on basically to say, well, we have to teach about racism because it's the legacy and the building blocks of America. Yeah, that's the real teachers. It's not in every school. We're not saying they teach critical race theory in every school. But that is the fad. That is the vogue. That's what our teachers' unions want to push. That's, again, what the State Board of Education was pushing in Virginia. It's not a ghost. It's real. You can see the documents. Anyway, this teacher, her name was Keziah Ridgway. She wrote an article for Education Week magazine and boasted she's what they call an abolitionist educator. And she claimed, she wrote, I teach African American history using a curriculum that has abolished the white supremacist, racist, and patriarchal lenses that are intrinsic within schools and are so harmful to all students. Now let's ask Nicole Wallace and Joy Reid and David Plouffe. What does that mean when we're abolishing white supremacist lenses and patriarchal lenses? You trying to tell me that students aren't going to get a big fat scoop of left-wing indoctrination? Abolitionist teaching, Keziah Ridgway explained, is, quote, steeped in community organizing and informed by critical race theory. The understanding that race is a social construct used by white people for their own political and financial gain. Let us underline that again for the thick heads at NPR and PBS and CNN and MSNBC and everywhere else in the liberal media. Critical race theory is about white people using race for their own political and financial gain. That's what they're going to teach the white children. Whiteness is a hell of a drug. That's what Jonathan Capehart just said on PBS. That's what they're going to hear in the classroom. I don't think Terry McAuliffe lost because of critical race theory in particular. Terry McAuliffe lost because he was just dumb enough to say parents shouldn't tell the schools what to teach. So it doesn't matter whether what the teachers are pushing is critical race theory, whether they're pushing transgender extreme sensitivity. You know, I was at Target yesterday, and they had a mug about, ask me about my pronouns. Now, if I saw somebody with that mug, I'd probably go, yeah, I'm not going to have coffee with you. I'm walking into a danger zone. There are two genders. How about that? And I'd get the coffee thrown in my face. But critical race theory is a giant conspiracy theory about the evils of whiteness. And yeah, maybe white parents in the suburbs don't think that's a great idea. And guess what? there's a lot of black parents who don't love the idea that you're going to go to their children and say, you're a victim of a grand conspiracy, so don't really aspire to doing anything great in America. Don't be a sap. Then you go over to CNN, where Van Jones, the executive director of White Lash, was at it again last night. Yes, Glenn Youngkins is the Delta variant of Trumpism. Isn't that cute? It's a fatal virus. The Republican candidate is a deadly virus. The Delta variant of Trumpism.
The stakes are high. When this election is over in Virginia, we will know. Have we seen the emergence of the Delta variant of Trumpism? The Delta variant of Trumpism. In other words, Youngkin, same disease, but spreads a lot faster and can get a lot more places. The suburbs, if they fall to him, you
now... That's implying that that Youngkin is more dangerous than the president, former president.
No, more easy to spread.
Okay.
Because more easy to spread. Because if you look at what he's doing, he is playing footsie with the worst of Trumpism. He's putting himself forward as a champion of parents. This is a referendum on parents' rights. But he's not talking about, he's using all the critical race theory head fakes and head nods, which is a softer version of a very virulent kind of anti-black posture. And so I think this is a very big deal, because if this is a pathway, if you can flirt with Trumpism, if you can flirt with Trump and still put and still win in the suburbs, that's a new development for us.
Oh, joy. White Lash. Just what we tune into CNN to watch. And yet, what's really funny is they sit here and they divide and they divide and they divide and they divide. And then it takes them till 12:30 a.m. for CNN to acknowledge, oh, CNN's projecting Glenn Youngkin's been elected. That's about, 2.5, 3 hours too late. We really should have been able to figure that out before the entire Eastern Seaboard went to bed. But we waited till 12:30 a.m. And then Jake Tapper announces, this is just shows America's incredibly divided. Joe Biden will not be happy to hear this. And then Dana Bash was like, yes, the country is incredibly divided. Well, CNN is incredibly divisive. That's what they do. You don't get to mourn about how America's incredibly divided when you're the one saying, oh, Trump is Stalin and Hitler. The Republicans are all evil. America's deeply racist. White Lash. Oh, and gosh, people are too divisive here in America. Now, we should say we've got some fun video we're digging out. Back in 2017, the networks celebrated Democrat wins in those states, in New Jersey and Virginia. They touted it as a stinging rebuke of Trumpism.
Good morning, stinging rebuke. A tough election night for President Trump and the GOP. Democrats with key victories in Virginia and New Jersey. The message sent by voters and who the president is pointing fingers at this morning.
Now more on the election results back here at home. Coming in overnight, Democrats seeing a lot of success, you know, coming out on top in that closely watched race for governor in Virginia.
1 year after President Trump's election, voters in Virginia and New Jersey go big for Democrats. Their candidates for governor win easy victories and lift a damaged party spirit.
What's the message from these elections?
Message is Republicans have to figure out whether they're going to fully embrace Trumpism or totally divorce themselves from it.
And the president suffering a defeat back at home. Democrats sweeping key races. What it means for the Trump agenda.
Northam's win fueling a big night for Democrats. The Army veteran and doctor making a clear reference to President Trump without ever mentioning him by name.
Virginia has told us to end the divisiveness, that we will not condone hatred and bigotry.
Ah, yes. Ralph Northam, the one that placed the picture in his yearbook with him either being the guy in the Klan hood or the guy in blackface. Yes, he's going to be the one to say, the Republicans are divisive. You know, maybe Ralph Northam's got a future on CNN. He and Adam Kinzinger. Then there's New Jersey. We had a victory in Virginia for the Republicans. And then, as of podcast time, it's still tick tight in New Jersey. It keeps going between Phil Murphy, the incumbent governor, and Chitterelli. We just learned how to pronounce Chitterelli. when a poll showed him down only 6 points. We were all looking at each other going, hey, this race is going to be an actual race. Where is the national media? Terry McAuliffe very much wanted to nationalize his race and went to the national press. He got to do the Jake Tapper show on CNN. I thought Jake Tapper didn't have on people who were election fraudsters. Terry McAuliffe couldn't acknowledge that George W. Bush won. Terry McAuliffe couldn't acknowledge that Stacey Abrams lost. But there he was on the Jake Tapper show. Because CNN really isn't against election lies as long as you're a Democrat. Anyway, you got to say this. Chitterelli stunned the political and media establishment with a breathtaking performance. Now I'm reading. Mr. Whitlock wrote it up. He prepared this in advance on the off chance that Chitterelli was competitive, and he had certain people here in the office suggesting to Scott Whitlock that this was a fool's errand to try to suggest, well, Chitterelli was not exactly a network news phenomenon. He won the Republican nomination on June 8 of this year, and the total coverage over the next 153 days until the election was 50 seconds, 5-0, 39 seconds in several little mentions on CBS, and 11 on ABC on Halloween Sunday night. Only that mention on ABC had the word Chitterelli in it. The mentions on CBS were basically just acknowledging, oh, there's a governor's race in New Jersey. Biden's got an eye on that. Well, an Emerson poll on October 18 found the race at 6. That's the one we noticed. That was down from a 16-point lead in August. And then a Trafalgar survey on October 31st said it was 4 points. So it's not like the networks don't go to Real Clear Politics or Polling Report or wherever you look at polls. They knew it was close. On CBS, on election morning, Major Garrett admitted that. He said, it should not be close. It is closer than you would think based on the blue state history of New Jersey. You think these guys ever think that maybe that's the wrong sound? This race should not be close. The Democrats should be slam dunking this. It's like, yeah, guess what, Major? You sound like a Democrat private. Now, if journalists had done their job and covered this tight race, maybe Chitterelli would have enjoyed greater name idea. Maybe he would have performed better. Maybe he would have attracted some out-of-state money. But the national media was like, Jack who? But this result, we don't know yet which party is going to prevail in the governor's race in New Jersey. But it may mean the difference in whether our Kyle Drennan wins the internal MRC office pool, because he picked the long shot to win. He took the long look. He was incredibly optimistic. More incredibly optimistic than Whitlock in this case, I might guess. So we will keep an eye on this as these returns kind of get finished. But you know it was a terrible, terrible election night for the Democrats, that they really didn't have any results they really liked. I guess, oh, the Democrats won the mayor of New York. Wow. Yeah, they didn't really have much to celebrate. So come by for the latest analysis, the video, the transcripts. Come to Newsbusters once, twice, 24 times a day, and thanks for listening.